up, and then he left that and went on his own. He'd worked awful hard. And he came home. No, the last time he represented him in St. Louis, Missouri, and he came home, he was tired. He had worked awful hard. And he said, I'm going to start out on my own someplace. While he was home, the bankers who knew of him, Jewish bankers in St. Louis, wrote him and asked him if he wouldn't come there and start, that any money he would need, they would have for him, because they knew he was making his firm $1 million a year, you know, and they all know that. So he moved to St. Louis, and I'll show you, he built it. Oh, $70 or $80 million worth of apartments, condominiums, shopping centers, things like that, all over the city. And he was known nationally. In fact, when he addressed the realtors and the construction people, there's about 1,000 people there. He was the only man who ever received a standing ovation when it was through, 10-minute standing ovation, so that he's an excellent orator. So, let's see, about my son.
How about telling us a little bit about your experiences as chairman of the draft board?
Oh, yeah. Congressman McDowell asked me if I would serve on the board, on the draft board, and it was centered here. And so I looked it up, and I knew it would be a hard job, a distasteful job, putting men in the army. And but I felt that he had asked me, and I felt I had an obligation to do. I knew the area. So I had an excellent board. One of them was Norris Wright, who was president of the bank. You know, there's all those Wright mansions up in Newark, where the president lives, and where the Blue and Gold Club is there. And I had men like that on it. And we were the only board that served the full 7 years. See, there was so many things happened that so many board members resigned. But and the board members would have their resignations written out, and I'd say, well, let's hold it over till next week. I'd say, you know, we're losing a few friends, but these boys are dying on the beaches. So we were the only board that served full 7 years. Here's an example of why it was tough. Legitimate farm boys, if they had certain number of units and crops, I mean, cows were so many, corn so much, if they had something like, I think, 16 units, they could keep one boy home on the farm. If they had two sons, and there was a farm board that was supposed to find him a job on a farm where he was needed. And this board would only do it if it was political. In fact, they would try to get us to leave a boy off who wasn't a farm boy, because they had influence with him. Well, you know me. I called a meeting. I wrote to Hershey. I said, we're dealing with men's lives. And of course, Hershey got hold of him.
This is General Hershey.
Yeah, General Hershey. They resigned. And of course, you know, one of them who was on that board eventually became vice president of the university. I'm not going to mention his name.
You're allowed to mention
his name. No, he was a little hunchback. I don't want to mention him. He was a political man, and he was known as Mr. Agriculture in the state. And he'd always say, "You shouldn't have written that letter." I said, "You should have handled your job right." So then when they, I got a congressional medal, service, you know, things like that, which you get. And then there was no more draft board, or it's called Selective Service Board. And each year you would get a frame for it signed by the president, you know, Truman and Roosevelt. So McDowell saw me again, asked me if I'd serve. Well, I said, "Harris," I said, "there's down Fort Knox, there's a little gold in the hill there. Not enough money." Not enough money. So that was my draft board experience.
Understand that sometime you saved the town hall. Tell us about that.
Okay. We had it's an old historical building here. It's the old school. And the money was raised, they sold things and raised the money. An old family. And we found out the board of directors appointed their successors, and there was money left that was all spent, except about $5,000. We found out that they had sold the front off for a post office with the understanding that the government would knock the old building down and level it off. Well, we didn't care if they sold the front on as long as the old building, because I had in mind a community center and a library and meeting, you know, things like that. So when we found out they were going to do that, that they had offered it to the government, I got hold of Herb Coben, you know, my brother. He also served as town lawyer for me, which was a little hitch, but he was the only one that I could trust. All these other lawyers were, you know, and he served for $1,000 a year. So, you know, it was nothing. Anyway, we got hold of him, and we went before the chancellor, who fortunately at that time was raised in this area as a boy. I forget his name. On the theory that the building was not being used for what it was intended as a school, and therefore we had relieved this board. You know. And they sent a letter to the chancellor, we had a suit about it, that they never offered to have the building knocked down. So we went to Washington, got a copy of the letter. Now this was perjury. And of course the chancellor bawled H out of them. You know. They all ran home. One was a town millionaire, and one was this Shallcross again, you know. And the only one that stood ground, and the lawyer, he was naturally embarrassed. They forgot. Anyway, it kicked them out. But then we found out that there was a clause there that if it wasn't used, it should go back to the old heirs. And we got hold of the old heirs, and 18 of us put up $100 a piece, and we bought it. So So now they have the town office there and the library, but I had $50,000 of government money to fix it up. And in those days, a lot of money. But the suit kept so long that we lost that. And it was one time, it was the St. George's Historical Society or things like that. Anyway, it's there now and it's being used. We used to have a playground in front, a winter playground in back. Now it's they have a library in Roseland. Interested in libraries. In fact, she was chairman of the trustees of the Libraries Association of the state. So she was.
She was very involved in setting up
in the library.
Yeah. What exactly did she do?
Well, she was chairman of the library trustees. See, each library has four or five trustees, and she was state chairman of all of them. And here, the library we had here was in the, it started with a, in the front of our mayor's office, got about three or four little bookcases. Now it's a beautiful library.
Is there a plaque for her there?
Yes, there's a little plaque. In fact, they had about $9,000 and they were adding a two-story room. And one of the board members said, we're going to name it the Roseland Levinson Room. And so I didn't ask him anything like that. So I knew they were $3,000. Sure, so I made a drive and I raised that $3,000 for, I guess I'm from Dave and his associates in St. Louis over here. So that without that $3,000, I wouldn't be able to finish the room. After it was built, there's one member of the board. He's not the sort of a guy I would like to be associated with. We never said we were going to name it. But David had said to me, Pop, you get it in writing. I've been connected with things like this before. After you raise the money, they won't do it. I said, David, these are friends of mine. These are responsible people. I wouldn't think of having to put it in writing, you know. Anyway, that was the story. So finally, they put up a little plaque in the office. So that was that story. She was also, I was out the Senator Isaac, the notorious Senator Isaac, at a wedding. And sitting there was a well-known senator. He was a little crippled up. And I met him. Everybody was going over there to meet him. I said, who is this important guy? I better want it. Levinson, I knew your wife. She was, when I was president of the PTA in the state, she was vice president. And right then I said, my Lord, Rosen would have to put up with him. He was a dumb baby if she served as vice president of the state PTA under him. Oh, yeah.
Have you been particularly interested in Delaware history?
Well, I've lived it. You know, I've been here 60 years.
You made it.
And people come here and say, "Well, you're a historian." You know what I mean? They ask me things about the old families and the land, which I've lived through, which I know, you know. So that mayor, I say 12 years, six, and we always licked the same gang. Who to what?
Well, you were aligned with the old families. Were the old families friends of yours?
Oh, yeah, sure.
And
Cochran's and the Biggses.
Socially friends of yours?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, fine.
Now, who were some of these old families?
The Biggses, Cochran's. They were the two chief families, Biggses, Cochran's.
In what connection were you associated with the DuPonts? You mentioned that this gift came from a DuPont family or somebody who married a DuPont. Did they have farms around here?
No. I would meet them. I was on committees. And one of my best friends was Waller Dent Smith, who married United States Senator Hastings' daughter. In fact, he just had me up to his home. And then to the country club. So he got three homes, one in Canada, one here, and one in the South. And he represented the DuPont interest in Canada. And he was the number one assistant to Irene DuPont. And I would meet him at the, I was on the welfare board. We would meet in the Delaware Trust boardroom, beautiful place. Box of cigars opposite each two, and it's a beautiful place to meet. Well, there would be Pierre DuPont, Irene Lamont, Bill DuPont is the only DuPont that I actually worked for professionally. He owned 10,000 acres Fair Hill, which was called the Center Square Corporation. He's one of two men that paid me $100 a visit. He had 10,000 acres, you know, and I spent an afternoon there. So he didn't like it. His father left him $100 million, and when he died, he was worth $500 million. That's how I. Now, I would meet when they built a library in Delaware College. It was a hexagonal thing. So I helped raise some money there. Well, then you would meet Pierre DuPont, gave a fourth of it, and so forth. This is interesting. I used to hear that wherever Pierre DuPont sat down, that was the head of the table. So I was, Dent Smith was chairman of welfare in the state, and I was vice chairman. Well, we would meet in the boardroom, Delaware Trust Company, and Dent Smith, he didn't show up. So I assumed they would hand me the minutes of the previous meeting, and I'd conduct them, of course, in walks, you know, all of the pots were on it, and nobody says anything to me, you know, and to serve as chairman of the meeting, you know. So in walks Pierre DuPont with, I don't know, three or four assistants with him. He sits down at the head of the table, and I might as well have been in New York. I found out then that we were just fronts, that he ran welfare of the state and ran it very, very well. But nobody told me this. So that was
a... So you didn't deal with them professionally, except you said for William DuPont, but most of the other socialites were... people that you met in your organization.
Sure, yeah, that's right.
Were you the only veterinarian in Middletown?
No, there were two, an elderly man who incidentally was Congressman McDowell's father, but he farmed out here and he didn't do too much. I think
he
was
about... Are you the veterinarian now?
Yes.
What kind of work did you do over the years? How did your work change in nature?
Well, first it was mostly all horses. You know, you were horse doctors.
Yeah.
Then the horses went out, tractors came in, and then cattle, you know, was very important. Cattle, hogs, sheep. And now the cows are leaving because a farmer can't make anything farming today.
Unless he grows soybeans.
Well, it's, and the horses are coming in.
Why are the horses coming in?
Race horses, mostly.
Oh, oh.
Mostly saddle hacks. A girl wants a horse to ride, so it gets her into certain social groups. Or we have race horses. We have standard breds, which are the harness racing, and thoroughbreds, you know, with the jockeys. Mine mostly now is the harness horses, the standard breds.
How about pets, dogs and cats?
Oh, yes. You're doing more small animals, although this is a fact. Since things have gotten a little tight, they don't have the money to spend on small animals. And I always charge modest fees because, this may be naive, but I couldn't help it. I charge modest fees so that I get my patients earlier. If you have a high fee like they do in certain areas, they wait and wait until an animal is so sick that it's hard to say. Touch wood, I don't aim on losing any of my patients. The average veterinarian lasts about 30 years. Well, I've lasted 60, so.
Have you been in practice 60 years?
Right here, 60 years.
That's marvelous.
Yeah, 60
that
years.
That is marvelous.
And I don't feel old.
You don't look it either.
See, I never get bitter. I've been hurt, you know, I've had one outfit said they could murder you and get away with it. They'd do it. So you knew how some areas hated me.
Are but these political enemies?
Political, mostly. But I never deliberately tried to hurt a man or anybody in my life. Some have been hurt because they'd fight me. They were wrong, you know, and some had hurt them bad. But I would no more deliberately plan to hurt any. Well, maybe, you know, I'm naive. And I never get bitter. You just hurt yourself. And I don't feel old. I'll be 83 in April. And
that's
I just don't feel old.
That's fantastic.
You know,
yes.
I don't.
I think your work, you enjoyed your work.
That's
enjoyed
it.
Your life.
I don't look at it as work. You know, I don't look at it as work.
Marvelous. There are so few people in the world who can say that.
Yeah.
Who enjoy their work that much.
I don't look at it as work. So now where are we now?
Well, I'm going to leave it up to you. If you have other things that you feel that you'd like to have recorded, or if Yetta has something that she'd like to ask, then we'll continue.
Let me see.
I might add, I think you have lived a remarkable life in this area.
Have you found a difficult being Jewish in the town? You said you took your son up to Beth Shalom.
Oh, sure.
Every week. But is it possible to be Jewish and live in a rural community?
Well, I explain it like this. I know them all. And I tell them that I believe in all faiths, and I honestly do, that if everyone followed their faith, and each faith teaches its followers to be decent, good people. So if everyone followed their faith, this would be a wonderful world. Now, one of the best compliments I ever got was we had a Presbyterian family here, both of them dead, Dr. Thomas and Mrs. Thomas, or her son's living. Johnny just rang me up the other day. The biggest compliment she could give me was, "You're the best Christian in Middletown." I mean, she meant that, you know.
A real Christian, a true Christian.
Or just.
Well, I think it shows in your face.
See what I mean? That, here I was at this 50th ordination of Dr. Pell over at a little church here, saying, one Sunday. Well, they asked me to go. Well, naturally, I was only Jew there. And of course, they all take communion. Well, you know, I don't take communion, you know. So a lady nicely, it was a client of mine, and in fact, sent me a box of cigars. He said, "I'll sit with you until it's over," or something like that.
So you are accepted?
Oh, yeah.
More than accepted.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have associations with the other Jewish families that live here?
Yeah, well, naturally, we married one up there.
Well, no, that you married. Oh, that's right. Your nephew married a Shagrin,
sure.
Right?
In fact, I'm going up to Rick Levinson, my nephew. My nephew's son is having a party on the 24th, and I'll go up with Milt with his father. Then I was supposed to have Thanksgiving dinner with Carl's daughter in Lancaster, and I wasn't able to make that. So I called Milt up and I said, "Milt, put an extra plate on. I'm going to have dinner with you." Well, he'd asked me before anyway. That's how you live. Of course, there's always anti-Semitism, you know, underneath. But I ignore it. I have been to all these churches. I used to sing. I used to sing in the churches that have affairs, you know. I would talk to the men's club. You know, that. In fact, one was a Methodist. And I started off, I remember, I said, "I've been praised in this church, and I've been cussed in this church." In fact, when I ran for office, this same group ran this church, and they had the minister talk against me, you know, which was very unusual. So that I just never take those things to heart. And
you've risen above them.
Well, it's how you're made up. I don't make any special effort. I just guess I'm naturally naive, or, you know, I just don't.
And again, the community, in a sense, has been dependent on you, too, because it's a farming community, and you are a veterinarian, and what you give is services they need.
Well, as I say, I handled welfare. I even handled rationing of gas. In fact, I wanted to write President, tell me what. In fact, this is funny. The president sent me a Christmas card.
Oh, you are one of a few. He didn't send
president
everyone.
Carter?
Wait, huh?
President Carter?
Yeah.
He didn't send everybody a Christmas
card. And I found out, I said, "Well, why did he send it to me?" I do belong to a club that he belongs to.
Wow.
President's Club. Anyway, I found out that he sent out 100,000, and they were mailed or sent out by volunteers.
Women volunteers, I read that too. And they started to address them way back in October.
When I got this, I saw, you know, from the White House, and Dr. Louis Levinson, Middletown, Delaware, the handwriting wasn't so good. And usually, you know, from the White House, it would be printed, you And so, well, I got letters from a lot of important people. In fact, I show you when this fella Hutter called up, I said, give me a month. And I went through all my, and I got it all piled where they hadn't showed up. And if I got to take that stuff off of there, I'm going to, I'm not going to hate him, but I don't think he did right by him.
No, he will show up. Yeah. He's just giving you time. Yeah. Whenever I call anyone, I can.
But,
is there anything we haven't asked you that we should?
I don't know. You know.
Well, you know, if you think of some things that that we haven't asked you, get in touch with us, and we'll be down again.
Yes.
And we certainly appreciate this time.
Personally, you know, I admire the most wonderful girl for 40 years. Beautiful. She had a lot of things wrong with her. Three strokes. But she did so much for so many people. She even organized a mental health auxiliary down at Stokely. Remember, it used to be pretty bad down there. And she felt that if she would organize a ladies' auxiliary, and if they'd go in there, then naturally they're expecting somebody and they would clean it up a little bit. And
that's marvelous.
And, you know, she had, and she, youngsters would come in and she would help them and advise them. And she's just a remarkable person, but she was taking the wrong medicine at the wrong time. She was taking an anti-clotting medicine. She had this little hemorrhage in the brain, of course, that didn't clot in half hour. She was gone, but she never felt any pain, thank God.
Well, maybe that's why you look so young.
She was just
a very fine wife.
Oh my, before no one could have ever had a, see, she was not what you would call a veterinarian's wife. Usually a veterinarian marries a farm girl or someone that helps him. She had her sphere, I had mine, and then we had some to join, you know? But she did so much. So much good, remarkable. She got unusual. She got two scholarship awards from the American Association of University Women. And she was president one year, you know. And they gave her one while she was still living and one later on, scholarships in her honor and in her memory.
Very nice.
I got hung up on the wall upstairs.
Well, we would like very much if you felt at any time that you're going through your papers that you would like to leave the Historical Society or give to the Historical Society any of your memorabilia. We would appreciate having it in our files. And we thank you very much.
We certainly do thank you very much.